Hey, are you a business owner, entrepreneur, or professional? If so, we want you to apply to be a featured guest on our show. My name is Adam Torres, and I host the Mission Matters series of podcasts. I've recorded over 3,000 episodes, and we are just getting started. How do you know if you'd be a good guest to be on the show? Well, only one way to find out, and that's to apply, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We want guests that have a story to tell, guests with a brand, a product, or a service that can benefit my audience of listeners. If this sounds like you, go to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. I'd love to talk to you and get to know more about your story. Again, head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, now let's get into the show. Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres. You can follow me on Instagram at AskAdamTorres to keep up with my book releases, book tour schedule, signings, all that other good stuff. Always love to connect with you there. And as always, if you'd like to apply to become a co-author of one of my upcoming books, just head on over to the website, missionmatters.com, and click on Become an Author to Apply. All right, so today I have Jason Zilberbrand on the line. He's president over at VRef. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hi, Adam. Thanks for having me.
All right, Jason. So excited to get into what you're doing over at VRef and also to talk about your journey that really led you up to VRef. And just to get us kicked off, I'll start off with our signature question that I ask all our guests, and that is, so Jason, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. So that's our mission here. Jason, what mission matters to you?
So I guess it's kind of twofold. At VRef, the mission I think that matters the most to us as a firm is to drive transparency in aircraft valuation and data through really a fairly comprehensive suite of products that we offer, including software as a service and then a fully comprehensive appraisal division. And then we do a ton of consulting and expert witness work. But really the main focus is just to really drive transparency. And I know that sounds kind of crazy because of what we're dealing with, but we deal with aircraft that range anywhere from a light sport or an entry-level trainer aircraft all the way through commercial. And depending on the size and the type of equipment you're dealing with, there isn't a whole lot of transparency in the marketplace. Some of the data that we provide allows buyers and sellers to actively do that, to have confidence, you know, what they're paying or what they're asking. And we track about 8,000 assets. We have about 700,000 subscribers that we help on a daily basis. And then in terms of my own personal mission statement, it's really a culmination of 3 decades of work in the industry, but it's to A, provide mentoring and do for, you know, the younger generation coming into our industry as I had the benefit of experiencing when I first got into the industry. And I think there's a lot of industries that don't have mentoring anymore. There isn't anyone to talk to. And I think a mentor is really important in terms of developing your career, especially something that is so myopic and so focused as aviation or appraising business aircraft or jets. So I think that, you know, my personal mission statement is really just to make myself available for as many, you know, young people who are starting their career path off, and hopefully I can help them get into aviation and stay in aviation.
So quite a story with VRef, and you did mention some of the things that you do, but I want to get maybe a little bit more granular there. So tell us a little bit more about the company and exactly what you do. So correct me if I'm wrong. It's like the kind of like the old, you know, Kelley Blue Book for cars and automobiles, for those that are listening that maybe looked at one of those days, but for aircraft. Am I oversimplifying that, or give me a little bit more there?
No, I mean, Adam, that's exactly it. So we are, and I use that line probably 1,000 times a day, we are the Kelley's Blue Book of aviation. Unlike Kelley's, you know, and Kelley's is a pretty old company, and they do things, you know, our methodology, I guess, is completely different just because of the assets that we deal with. Mm-hmm. But at a top level, or I guess a really high level, you know, we do the exact same thing. We track every aircraft that gets sold, every aircraft that gets purchased, every aircraft that gets manufactured. We do so through intimate relationships with the manufacturers directly, as well as thousands of professionals, whether they're an inventory dealer or a broker, and we do that globally. And I guess the big difference is Kelley's relies heavily on the manufacturer's data and the car dealer network, and they're dealing with thousands upon thousands of vehicles, right? Ford makes about 100,000 plus F-150s every month. I think the largest fleet of aircraft that we have in general aviation is about 20,000. And that's just one make and model. So what you find is that you're dealing with very small numbers. You're dealing with highly protective data. You're not going to be able to Google what the value is of optional equipment or floor plan changes or where the galley's located or the type of broadband it has. And, you know, an airplane is very similar, you know, to a big building, especially when you start getting into the larger business jets and commercial aircraft. There's lots of subsystems. There's a whole bunch of stuff that you can put inside of it. They all have different maintenance schedules, and maintenance is a big deal. Unlike the car world, where you can literally stick a car, and you hear about the barn finds all the time, right? You can stick a car in a garage and basically never pay any attention to it again, and then 30 years later, hop in and go drive it. Couldn't do that with our plane, even if you wanted to. We have airworthiness directives that we have to abide by, especially in the United States. And so if the aircraft isn't maintained properly and isn't done so on an annual basis, unfortunately, what you wind up having is nothing more than scrap value. And so we really do the bulk of the appraisal work in the industry, and most of what we deal with, 75% of that work is for financing. And so very similar to the real estate, you know, industry, we support aircraft purchases through aircraft lending directly with most of the lenders themselves, so the big banks. So we're a fiduciary. We're there to protect the bank. We're there to make sure that they're not lending on equipment and overlending. And likewise, anybody that hires us, we're their fiduciary, much like a CPA or a lawyer or a doctor. We have that intimate of a relationship with the people that own the aircraft or are seeking to own the aircraft. And so it's a high level responsibility. Unlike the car world, where some of this stuff is only worth a few thousand dollars, even cheap 60-year-old piston aircraft are still worth, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000. So rich people all have the same thing in common. And it's, I think it's interesting for your listeners to really grasp, you know, the value of these assets. So the wealthiest people in the world, their most expensive asset is still their plane. They don't have houses for the most part that are worth 50 and 60 million. And that is what a brand new long range business jet would cost you. So I think it's interesting, you know, even billionaires who live in $25 and $30 million homes, they still have an airplane that's probably worth twice that much, or at one point it was. And so that's kind of, you know, what we do every day is just tracking the ebb and flow of aircraft transaction data. And then on top of that, on top of the appraising work, we do a ton of litigation consulting. And that's probably something that a lot of people aren't familiar with, but if they've seen, you know, Law and Orders or any of your, you know, your famous murder mystery movies, there's always a trial and there's always an expert witness that gets called in. And so that's what we do. Right. We do expert witness work. We do some forensic work. But for the most part, it's expert witness work in terms of contract disputes or damage to airplanes. And a lot of it's damage. You know, for whatever reason, airplanes are magnets for damage. And if you think about it, you know, you have an aircraft sitting on a very busy, in terms of traffic, you know, ramp on an airport. There's always ground traffic going by. Sometimes they get hit because of an unfortunate, you know, experience with pilot error, or it happens in flight, or it's, you know, an operational situation. And sometimes it's on the ground just due to negligence. So we get called in usually to represent the insurance company to assist in the litigation. And those cases take on a life of their own. And it can go years and years and years between getting hired and actually seeing the trial. Most of it does settle, but it's a ton of work. And that's really, you know, the three buckets, I guess, of stuff that we do every day at BREF. We have, like I said, about 700,000 clients. I personally appraise the FAA's aircraft, most of the Fortune 100 flight departments. I do a lot of crazy estate work, a lot of famous people, as you can imagine. And then just a really crazy, just a ton of different types of aircraft. Everything from, like I said, light sport experimentals through warbirds and commercial aircraft.
So, I mean, just the success of it overall, Jason. So just thinking about like the value of like, okay, so Kelly Blue Book's been along a long time, you know, aircraft's been around a long time. So it's like, why hasn't somebody thought about this before? Like there was obviously a need from in the market. Like, what did people tell you when you launched this idea initially? Like, they're like, is it possible? Or like, what was your feedback initially?
So here's the interesting thing. You know, I don't really think anybody thinks about the data until the day comes that they need it or they need to recall it, right? And I guess part of it is just being incredibly organized in terms of every time you learn something, you know, whether it's statistical or, I don't know, equipment base or serial number situations, but, you know, you've got to record it, right? And I think for most people, they think they're going to retain all of this stuff in their head. And I can tell you that it just becomes nearly impossible, especially if anybody out there is a gearhead or deals with cars or boats or trains or planes. You'd like to think that you're a master of all of it after you've been doing it for decades and decades. But the truth is it's garbage in, garbage out over a period of time. Mm. And so our advantage is that we're like your memory bank. We don't forget anything because we always write it all down and we publish it, right? So the data about, you know, this serial number cut off and this equipment's no longer part of it, or they changed the, you know, the operational gross weight or the avionics suite, right? All that data is very important, but it's also very easy to forget. And so I don't really think that anybody sets out and building a database and has any idea what's going to come of it. And I got really lucky. I actually came from my dad and I started a family insurance business in aviation, and he started it just before I had gone off to college. And so he dragged me out of school my sophomore year, and I came to work with him building an insurance company within aviation. And I bought and sold aircraft for about 15 years. I mean, I had a lot of experience with airplanes, owning them and operating them. And VREF actually was somebody else's baby that they had taken as far as they could, and then they wanted to retire, and I acquired it. And I think that that was a very big deal for them, because this is a lot of responsibility, and you need to have a great deal of expertise and knowledge. And so without tooting my own horn, I mean, I guess I was one of the very few people that would be able to take this business on just because of what's required to be able to do it. I mean, not only do you need to know everything about the aircraft, but you need to know everybody and everything about the industry. And so I just got really fortunate. I was in the right place at the right time. You know, growth revenue and software as a sales business, I think, is a wonderful situation, especially for, you know, people that are just getting started and looking for something to do from an entrepreneurial standpoint, because, you know, a SaaS business generates revenue while most people are sleeping, right? And because we have a lot of upfront costs and then we get it back slowly over time, you know, it really becomes an investment, you know, a direct investment in yourself, a direct investment in the business. And what I think, you know, if you do things properly and don't wind up getting abused by your software developers, and I mean, that's a whole nother subject. I could probably talk about that for months just because of what goes on in that side of the business. But if you can actually have a product that people will see enough value in that they're willing to pay you every month to gain access to, I mean, it would take an awful lot to screw it up, right? So part of what we do is we play in a really, I mean, a high level integrated role in every aviation professional's business, whether it's a banker, a broker, an insurance company. And those are the businesses, right? Everybody sits down to solve a problem and do so for the masses. And this is just one of those situations where it would be nearly impossible for anybody to start a competitive business. The obstacles to entry would be, where are you going to get the data from? And it's certainly not going to come from us. And there's no way anybody's going to be able to develop it quickly. I know a lot of people that think it's really easy what we do until they try and emulate it and they wind up disappearing. It is an incredible labor-intensive business. I have over 100 researchers, and all they do is deal with the data every day. So it winds up being one of those situations that you're only as good as your historical data will provide, right? And so banks and buyers, they always talk about residual values. And I think that that's something that you hear a lot about in the car world, too. And I think if you really pay attention to the Kelley Blue Book marketing and what a lot of the manufacturers are talking about, they're talking about residual value. What's it going to be worth? You know, when I'm done with my Volvo or my Tesla or whatever, what's it going to be worth, right? And people are interested in buying things that are going to be worth more when they're done with it, not less. And so part of what we do is not only are we telling people what equipment in terms of valuation, but then we start getting into really granular stuff like safety of flight and how many are left in active service. And then how do you maintain it? And who do you go to for maintenance, right? So it becomes very complicated very quick. Owning an airplane is not like owning a car. I think even novice car owners are capable of getting their oil changed. They're capable of getting their filters changed. They're capable of doing their windshield, you know, wipers and fluids. They're very capable of bringing it back to the dealership once a year. Aircraft ownership, you're doing that every day, right? Anything can break at any time. And so you're doing these checklists, pre-flight and post-flight. And the one thing that's associated with maintenance is money. And so it gets very easy to understand how people would be very focused on value when they're spending money every day to keep their aircraft flying, right? So it's just a very, it's a lot different than the car world. It's just highly integrated, all of these concepts and all these conversations. You know, likewise, you know, rarity in our world is a bad thing, whereas rarity in the car world is a really good thing. If you own a one-of-a-kind car, especially if it's a high-performance exotic, it's going to be worth a lot of money. It will continue to go up in value. In the airplane world, a one-off is worthless. Nobody's going to want it, right? You have to get to a certain number of aircraft within its own fleet before that aircraft is, you know, popular, before people will look at it as an option. And then the one thing that goes hand in hand with the size of the fleet is support, right? So small fleets, aircraft that are highly specialized, they need to make a lot of, they're very expensive to maintain, and there's not a lot of people you can go to for help. And sometimes the people you need to go to aren't even in the same country that you're in. So it's just a whole different bailiwick. And so one of the things that I think we really bring to the table is resources, you know, whether it's a first time buyer. And I forgot to mention, we are AOPA's partner, and AOPA is the Aircraft Owner and Pilots Association. It's the largest private membership association in the world. And really what we bring to the table is helping, you know, whether it's a first time buyer acquire, you know, his or her aircraft, or helping them with the financing, or handling the appraisal, or doing the pre-purchase inspection. I mean, we literally have our hand in so many different aspects of the transaction that people really lean on us just to close, just to get, you know, the aircraft acquired. It's an interesting business. You know, it's something that I always wanted. I've always been an entrepreneur. My dad's always been an entrepreneur. I mean, he literally went from the parking business in downtown Chicago to the salad dressing business to owning and operating an aircraft insurance company and not even knowing what an airplane was. I mean, he's truly the epitome of an entrepreneur. It is. I mean, and what's really crazy about it is he didn't really have, for the most part, he never really had. He just happened to stumble upon things at the right time and get out of them before he was in over his head. And I think that's a really important thing. You know, there's a couple things that I keep close to my vest. And one is I only do what I know. You know, anytime I've stepped outside of aviation, I've lost. And I mean, it's always been a financial loss. And no matter how much I've tried over the years, I don't know enough about these other industries to know what I need to stay away from or to know what I need to go towards. And so my first rule is just stick to what you know. And then I really try and limit, you know, risk taking at this point in my life. You know, I don't really have a whole lot of desire to go jump into another endeavor, you know. So it's just my dad, complete opposite. He gets bored quickly. I'm telling you, he's like the epitome of an entrepreneur. And he just happened to have gotten really lucky with the insurance business that they didn't have any substantial claims in the first few years, you know, that he started it. But, you know, aircraft is, it's a complicated one. You know, there's a whole bunch of rules, and then Murphy's Law plays, unfortunately, plays the biggest role in owning an airplane. They break when, you know, Christmas Eve, they break, you know, July 4th. They break every time that you need it, depend on it. They leave you stranded. They're super expensive. And then the really nice thing is that they're probably the sexiest thing, you know, in the world, right? Everybody aspires to owning their own airplane. It's like truly what separates even those that make a ton of money. And I find this fascinating. People that make, you know, what I would consider a lot of money, $50, $100 million, have that kind of net worth. They still don't have the cash to be able to afford a brand new long-range business jet. Even they aspire to own a long-range business jet. And, you know, those models for your listeners, like you hear Gulfstreams and G650 and G550 and then Bombardier, you know, Global Expresses and Global 6000s and Falcon 7Xs and 8Xs. Those are the big boys. Those are the planes that even the wealthiest of the wealthy sometimes can't afford or can't justify ownership of. And so you're dealing with just a very small network, a very small group of people, very hard to infiltrate and super easy to tick them off, right? You're dealing with people that aren't accustomed to being told no. And what's nice about what we do is that we're there to help them. I mean, the people that I deal with, you'd be shocked. I mean, it's crazy. They call me, you know, in my little office and they ask for help and I'm always stunned. And it's because we've been doing it for so long, you know, you kind of discount what your own skill sets are and what you really bring to the table. And I think that's another thing that I try and remind myself, because it's easy for entrepreneurs, I think, to get down to the dumps and be depressed from time to time and not feel like they have any self-worth, and especially if they don't see regular. And so that's like one of the things I try and remind myself of, is that, you know, numbers are numbers, but it feels good to know that people genuinely appreciate, you know, when you add value to their company or to their acquisition, or you're just there to protect them. And it's nice, you know, it's nice not having to deal with buying and selling anymore, or, you know, service businesses, I think, are difficult because you're always, you know, at everybody's beck and call. You don't necessarily have hours anymore. But if you're good at what you do and you don't let your client base down, they're a phenomenal source of referrals.
No, definitely. And Jason, I'll tell you, this has been a great conversation. Just getting to know more about you, your background, like the role in aviation, obviously. And it sounds to me like, I mean, this business was made for you. I'm just excited to see the continued growth of VREF and your mission and the increase in transparency and just what you're doing overall. I mean, it's a great entrepreneurial story. And it's awesome to also get to learn more about your dad and his entrepreneurial journey. A lot of business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives listen to this show, so I'm sure they'll be inspired just as I was. That being said, Jason, so if somebody's listening to this and if they want to learn more about VREF or just to follow your journey in general and connect with the content you're putting out there, I mean, what's the best way for people to do that?
So I'm on LinkedIn, so anybody can certainly look me up. My website is VREF.com and my email address is jason@vref.com. And yeah, I mean, I'm always happy to help. I get emails from people, you know, looking to become appraisers or looking to get into the industry. I think that's really what I enjoy doing. Yeah, so if there's anybody that has a question, whether it's aircraft related or not, yeah, fire away. I'm happy to help.
Awesome. Well, again, Jason, really appreciate you coming on the show today. And to the audience, as always, thank you for tuning in. Hope you got a lot of value out of this. Hope you were inspired. If you were, don't forget, hit that subscribe button. We definitely want you to be a return listener and a return visitor. Have many more mission-based entrepreneurs and businesses coming up for you. And Jason, thanks again for coming to the show. It has been a pleasure.
Thanks, Adam.